All right, talking about little kids for a moment. Now, do little kids have the same type of heart that we have? No. What do they have? Okay, it's smaller, it beats faster, but a little infant, still in mommy's womb, has holes in it. Why does it have holes in it? Because the lungs aren't functioning yet. So there's no air coming, or there's no oxygenated blood coming back from the lungs. So there's really hardly any blood going to the lungs at all. Where's the oxygenated blood coming from? Coming from where? It's coming from mom, the placental circulation. So your heart has a hole in the septum. And that hole allows the blood to go both directions, so that you have oxygenated blood going throughout both the pulmonary and the systemic circulation. There's also a little artery that connects the aorta and the subclavian vein, and that's called the ductus arteriosus. Now, the moment that little itty-bitty kid comes out of that womb, gets squeezed out, takes a deep breath and says, "Put me back!" What happens? The foramen ovale starts shrinking and the ductus arteriosus vasoconstricts, and both of them will eventually be completely closed off with connective tissue. So if you ever listen to a little baby's heartbeat a day or two post-birth, what do they have? Murmurs, because they got holes in their heart. Yes. I'm not going to say it happens all the time, but in the hospital, it happens all the time. There's a phenomenon called Berkson's bias, where very, very rare diseases are quite common in hospitals, because where do people with rare diseases go? To the hospital. So, you know, you go to the hospital, you get a very skewed view of reality, because you're like, man, everyone has this disease. Really, no. But everyone who has it comes to the hospital. So you'll see it all the time, but it doesn't happen that commonly. But yes, the hole in the heart, the foramen ovale, can forget to close in some children.
So if it's caught early, then, you know, they can
always... Right. Yeah. They can surgically... I think so. I'm not so up to date on my fetal therapies. So, yeah, I'm not a kid person. All right, pregnancy. In pregnancy, there's an increase in blood volume because the female is now supplying two blood supplies. Now, what is blood made of? Water and cells and protein. Now, what can happen is those cells, what's the number one cell in the body? In the blood. Cell, not protein. Red blood cells. And what are red blood cells made of? What do they carry? What is their raison d'etre? Say again? Hemoglobin. And hemoglobin requires iron. So one of the things that can happen when a woman gets pregnant is she becomes anemic because she doesn't have enough iron intake. All right, the aging adult. We already talked about this a bit when we talked about blood pressure. Systolic pressure will increase. Diastolic pressure will decrease. And the reason for that is because the aorta stops being elastic and becomes sclerotic, more like a garden hose, less like a rubber tube. And so what that does is it makes the heart have to pump harder during systole, but then there's less pressure during diastole. Now, is less pressure during diastole a good thing? Why? What happens during diastole? Okay, so remember, we squeeze the hand gets pale. Blood can only come to that hand when it is relaxed. Blood can only perfuse the heart and feed the heart when the heart is relaxed. So, A high diastolic pressure helps now push blood into the heart during that short relaxation phase. Now, at the same time, the heart is pumping harder during systole, right? Does that make the heart thicker? So now you've got thicker, you have more or less muscle? More muscle. Does that more muscle need more oxygen? Yes. So what you've done is you've decreased the perfusion of the heart, and at the same time you've increased its oxygen demand. Do you think that person is more at risk if they have a heart attack or some other problem? Yes. So this is a bad thing in adults. There are some ways that it can be treated. You'll find that just knowing this little bit of aging physiology puts you ahead of most of the doctors in this country. And I have a very smart book you can read if you'd like to verify that this is true. Myocardial thickening because of this increase in systolic pressure, and then something we call decreased exercise augmentation. Now, for those of you cardio buffs, that doesn't exist. When you do your cardio, what is the goal? Increase the heart rate. And what is the goal in increasing your heart rate? Do you have like a goal you're supposed to get to? Yes. The target heart rate. I am working at 70% of my maximum. Well, I'd like to work out shorter today, so I'm going to work at 80%, but only for a little bit. Not as long. I am doing more efficient exercise. Now, elderly people do not have the ability to raise their heart rate as high, which means that they cannot exercise as much. They don't have as much tolerance for either intensity or duration. Now, that's not obviously not everyone, but it's a generally speaking that that's what happens as people get older. I was at a continuing education conference recently, and this guy showed about 2004, I think it was, there was a water skiing championship here in Florida, and there was this lady competing. She won her age class. She's 94 years old.
Age class?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, what is that age class? Like 80 and above? 70 and above? But so it was a question someone had. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, exercise is increasing stress on the body.
Right.
There's different kinds of stress. And one of the things you have with weight-bearing exercises, like running and jumping and playing football, is that you increase the risk of injury to the musculoskeletal system. So you're not necessarily helping. It's not so much that it... You have two different issues at stake there. One is the fitness factor. The other is the stress on the musculoskeletal system. And what we find is in elderly people, their bodies can handle the exercise, the stress on the whole system, but they can't handle the stress on the musculoskeletal system. So that's why things like water aerobics become, you know...
Beneficial for them?
Yeah. And that's why you hardly ever see young people do them, because their bodies go... This is stupid. I can do it, you know. And they go do weight-bearing exercises.
And can their bones still, like when you jump up and down or go running, your bones get...
Yeah, again, it's generalities. Generally speaking, the older a person gets, the weaker their bones get. Men don't get osteoporosis typically until they become 80 or so. Then their risk of osteoporosis goes way up. Women, it starts around 50. So they both will get osteoporosis, just a matter of when. One of the best ways to prevent osteoporosis, exercise. And what kind of exercise? Weight bearing. So walking, running, jumping rope, playing basketball, all that kind of stuff is good for preventing osteoporosis. Now, the problem is those weight bearing exercises, if they're high impact exercises, will degenerate the joints prematurely. And we have, you know, 40-year-olds who are runners who need knee and hip replacements because they've completely worn out their joints.
Which one's better?
Neither.
Well,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, what would be the best would be a non. What would be the best would be a non or light impact weight bearing exercise like
swimming.
Walking. Now, speed walking is a high impact exercise. You know, walk with our Doberman. I mean that. she walks, you know. I mean, I've worn out so many shoes just walking her. I mean, I bought some Crocs. They have like Croc sandals. They're supposed to be made for walking. Within 4 months, there's like no sole. I mean, it's like worn down to nothing. So, I mean, you know, and I start getting heel spurs. So, you know, walking is not necessarily low impact depending on how you do it. You need to have the right shoes to